violence against trans people is the absolute number one issue. And even more particularly is violence towards transgender women of color.
I knew it. I was different when I was 11. When a man is talking, all I'm looking at is his lips. It doesn't matter what he's talking about. When I was 14, a man flirted with me. And I went red in my cheeks and my heart was pounding. And I was like, don't do this, do it a little more. Don't do this, do it a little more.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Gambia joins Africa's Jail the Gays for Life Club, and activist poets 18 transforming moments, and an outing in India with a happy ending. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Laveau.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending November 22nd, 2014. Gambia has joined Nigeria and Uganda as one of the most anti-LGBT countries in Africa. President Yahya Jammeh has made several inflammatory homophobic comments during his long tenure as the West African country's uncontested leader, including threatening LGBT people with decapitation. He signed a bill into law in October that's only now come to light that punishes some forms of same-gender sex with life in prison. Gambia previously sentenced those convicted of private consensual adult same-gender sex with 14-year prison terms. The language of the newly enacted Gambian measure seems to parrot the draconian law in Uganda, first known as the Kill All the Gays Bill, which was eventually tempered with life in prison rather than execution. Uganda's constitutional court overturned that law on a legal technicality in August. But a new proposal, which some warn could be even worse than the original, may be considered by Uganda's parliament before the end of this year. The Gambian version also defines aggravated homosexuality as acts committed by serial offenders or people living with HIV or AIDS, or sex with a minor, someone under the influence of drugs, or a disabled person.
According to Amnesty International, since Gambia's parliament passed the bill 2 months ago, there's been a noticeable increase in arrests, detentions, and torture of those suspected of being LGBT. Amnesty accused security forces of resorting to beatings and the threat of rape and other abuses if detainees do not confess or refuse to name other LGBT people. The new United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Jordan's Prince Zayed Raad Zayed Al Hussein, charged that the new Gambian law violates fundamental human rights, among them the right to privacy, to freedom from discrimination, and freedom from arbitrary arrest and detention. Gambia has become the fourth African nation to impose lifetime prison sentences for homosexuality. According to The Advocate, the others are Sierra Leone, Tanzania, and Zambia. Four other African countries call for the execution of those convicted of being LGBT: Mauritania, Somalia, Sudan, and Nigeria.
Post-occupation Iraq has never been a safe place for LGBT people either. But now they're caught between Islamic State forces that punish homosexuality with execution and violent assaults by pro-government vigilantes. A report released this week by the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, or IGLHRC, and the Organization for Women's Freedom in Iraq, warned that LGBT Iraqis are at imminent risk of death amid a breakdown in law and order and the rise of sectarian militias. In June, two adolescent boys thought to be gay were beheaded by the League of the Righteous, their heads thrown in the garbage. In June and July, at least two militia attacks took place in Baghdad against people perceived to be LGBT. The report also notes that another Shiite militia group in May published the names of men who were wanted for committing the crime of sodomy, even though same-gender sex is not illegal in Iraq. Once exposed, an LGBT person's only hope is escape to a shelter or safer area. But the Islamic State has taken control of northwestern Iraq, blocking the main escape route to the relatively safer Kurdistan. According to the report, family and community members, along with the authorities, are often complicit in abuses against LGBT individuals. Parents tend to disown their LGBT sons and daughters, or even worse, kill them to protect tribal or family honor. Eaglehurk Middle East and North Africa program coordinator Hussein Alizadeh told the Washington Blade that there's sheer chaos. There is not enough international interest in providing protection.
But in this week's U.S. marriage equality news, the Supreme Court on November 20th denied South Carolina's request for a stay of last week's federal district judge's ruling that declared the state's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples unconstitutional. South Carolina officials may still challenge the ruling, but the Supreme Court action allowed same-gender couples to begin marrying this week, even if the state pursues an appeal.
A federal judge on November 19th overturned the ban in the state of Montana. The ruling by U.S. District Judge Brian Morris was effective immediately, and since there is no waiting period in the state, gay and lesbian couples began marrying right away. "The time has come for Montana," Morris wrote, "to recognize that laws that ban same-sex marriage violate the constitutional right of same-sex couples to equal protection of the laws." At last count, same-gender couples can now legally marry in 35 U.S. states and the District of Columbia.
Two openly gay men made U.S. sports news this week. Derek Gordon came out in April, becoming the first National Collegiate Athletic Association Division I men's basketball player to do so. He scored 17 points, grabbed 9 rebounds, and made 11 out of 12 free throws, including 2 in the last 18 seconds of the game this week, as his University of Massachusetts Minutemen defeated Siena 95-87. According to the Boston Globe, Gordon discovered that his fears about coming out were unfounded. "Turns out he feels fine," the paper reported, noting that he enjoys the support of his teammates and the UMass community. "He is happy that his game, like his life, feels freer, to the point that he sometimes feels he can fly on the court," the paper said, adding that he also is happy to be, he believes, on track to be drafted by an NBA team.
Gordon said during his coming out interview on ESPN earlier this year that he was inspired by Jason Collins, who in 2013 became the first active player in the U.S. National Basketball Association to come out. He spent his last pro season this year with the Brooklyn Nets. The 35-year-old Collins announced in Sports Illustrated this week that he's retiring and called the 18 months since his April 2013 coming out exhilarating. Nets general manager Billy King issued a statement congratulating Collins on a distinguished NBA career, noting that he was an integral part of our back-to-back Eastern Conference championship teams. We wish him well as he embarks on a new chapter in his career. Collins has increased his profile as an advocate for LGBT equality since coming out and was recently included in Time magazine's annual list of the 100 most influential people. "My goal right now," he wrote, "is to empower others."
Two U.S. country music stars came out on the same day this week. First, it was veteran singer-songwriter Ty Herndon, who's had 7 top 10 singles on Billboard magazine's country music chart, with 3 reaching number 1. Interestingly, with his latest album called Lies I Told Myself, he officially came out on November 20th in an exclusive interview with the syndicated TV show Entertainment Tonight.
"And who they said you were is who you'll always be. Some lies I told myself, glad I didn't believe."
I've dreamed about being in country music since I was 6 years old, and it's my life, it's what I do, it's who I am. And today, I get to tell the world that I'm an out, proud, and happy gay man.
Later in the day, singer Billy Gilman posted a video announcement online that he too is a proud gay man. Gilman became the youngest singer to land a top 40 hit on country music charts in 2000, when he was just 11 years old. And 2 of his albums after that were certified gold. He said in his video that he drew inspiration from Herndon's announcement.
"Don't let your lips be still. Say it."
Today, actually, a fellow country artist and friend made it easier for me to make this video. Being a gay male country artist is not the best thing. And now that I have finally found my place as a person, that only makes the music that much better. I felt it was time for me to be honest and to be truthful.
And finally, Benji the Bull, who is scheduled for the slaughterhouse in Ireland because his owner thinks he's gay, will instead spend the rest of his life in an animal sanctuary. Benji failed to impregnate any heifers at the Western Ireland farm. Veterinarians determined that he was fertile, but was more attracted to the bull that replaced him. Ireland's Animal Rights Action Network launched an online appeal to save Benji. PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, alerted Sam Simon about Benji's looming execution. Simon is a longtime animal rights supporter and co-creator of the long-running animated comedy series The Simpsons. He ponied up 5,000 pounds, almost 8,000 U.S. dollars, to send the bull to the Hillside Animal Sanctuary in Norfolk, England, which is home to about 2,000 unwanted farm animals and horses. All animals have a dire destiny in the meat trade, but to kill this bull because he's gay would have been a double tragedy, Simon said in a statement. It thrills me to help make Benji's fate a sanctuary rather than a sandwich. And that's News Wrap for the week ending November 22nd, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
Hi, this is Dan Matthews, author of Committed, a Rabble Rouser's Memoir, and Senior Vice President of PETA. And you're listening to This Way Out.
A TV show in India got a warning this week that a panel on LGBT rights violated the country's reinstated Crimes Against Nature law. One of those panelists is still speaking out later in the program. Raped, beaten, stoned, burned, murdered, some even dismembered. Hundreds of trans people are assaulted and killed every year. They were memorialized at events around the world for the 16th annual International Transgender Day of Remembrance on November 20th. Transgender Europe's Trans Murder Monitoring Project documented 226 deaths this year, with the caveat that anti-trans hate crimes are drastically underreported. Stemming the tide of violence has been the primary focus for Minneapolis, Minnesota African-American trans activist and poet Andrea Jenkins. She discussed her work and shared a poem with This Way Out correspondent Dixie Trichel.
I work as a senior policy aide for the 8th Ward City Council member Elizabeth Glidden, and we were talking about ways that we can potentially do something positive to help create better opportunities for the transgender community and make sure that transgender people, queer, would be able to access the opportunities and resources that are available at the city.
What do you think is the most important issue right now for trans folks?
Violence against trans people is the absolute number one issue. And even more particularly is violence towards transgender women of color. Mm-hmm. And so we think that the biggest conversation is going to happen around police-community relations. The violence is coming from people that hate transgender people, but it's also coming from the police community as well. Why is that violence so prevalent? I mean, you can say that the lack of access to being able to get proper ID, which leads to the lack of employment, which leads to the lack of housing, which then leaves a lot of transgender people trying to make a life on the street in somewhat illegal activities, be it sex work or drug sales or shoplifting, survival crimes, I call them. They don't have access to the broader economic structure in our society.
Andrea is also a poet and writer, and you're going to read a poem for us.
18. 18 hours since her last meal. Her head is spinning with desperation. Hypersexualized body looks good, but the 5 o'clock shadow is 9 hours over the limit, and her wig is beginning to look matted. She was 18 when she left home. College was on the streets. The school day was long, seemed like it never ended. Many nights spent on sticky tricks sofas. Days spent as a social activist, marching, lobbying, organizing. 18 trans women of color gathering for an outpouring of self-love. Laverne Cox says that loving a trans woman of color is a revolutionary act. Sisters are doing it for themselves. Walking the streets of Bangkok, Thailand, 18 hours before the life-altering surgery, body didn't evolve the way she dreamed of in her tiny bed inside a shared bedroom that proved to be unsafe. Her mind flashed back to that birth certificate, assigned male at birth, socialized in a patriarchal world, yet unable to fully relate to the constant challenge of trying to live her truth in an upside-down reality. 18 times she threw out all of her women's clothing, known in the community as the purge, ridding oneself of all the reminders of the transgression she contemplated by the day, annually, for as long as she can remember. Doctors prescribe birth control pills for women for approximately 18 days a month, but some trans women take estrogen every day. The desired effects never really come, though. Still, she remains faithful to the goddess. 18 candles on Transgender Day of Remembrance. 18 trans women of color murdered. And not always by those who hate them, but by the men who have made love and shared love with them, but want to keep those secrets in the dark. Shout out to 18 trans sisters out there doing the damn thing. Cherno Biko, Lourdes Ashley Hunter, Ariana Lent, Cecilia Chung, Valerie Spencer, Ashley Love, Angelica Ross, Erica Carter, Monica Roberts, Miss Major, Janet Mock, Laverne Cox, Tracy McDaniel, Cece McDonald, Paradise Lachey, Rahima Martinez, June Remus. It's been 18 years since this journey began, a long way from the days of fear and loathing. Although her life may seem charmed to outsider, she knows that her trans brothers and trans sisters are struggling out there. So she tells their story.
That was poet and activist Andrea Jenkins reading 18 and discussing transgender politics with Dixie Trykle.
I've got a sweet tooth, licorice drops and jelly rolls. Hey, sugar daddy, I'm some meat, some sugar in his bowl.
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedvig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Hi, I'm NewsWrap reporter Christopher Gall. It's that time of the year again when many of our U.S. listeners consider ways to maximize their annual charitable tax deductions.
And I'm NewsWrap reporter Chris Ann Eastwood. No matter where you are in the world, we need your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to do your part to keep this nonprofit, volunteer-based program going.
You'll also find some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives as our way of saying thank you. And those CDs make unique holiday gifts, too.
Please go to thiswayout.org to support our efforts to inform, entertain, and educate listeners around the world. Or postal mail your contribution to P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA.
From the This Way Out family to you and yours, happy holidays and thank you.
Our U.S. listeners are also encouraged to support This Way Out by participating in the Giving Tuesday campaign on December 2nd. Time for another audio postcard from our favorite storytelling, filmmaking, adventurer partners, the Sapphic Nomads. Katie Cook and Maggie Young quit their jobs to travel the globe for a year looking for LGBT communities along the way and seeking to educate themselves and others about what it's like to be queer in different parts of the world. They've sent us souvenirs from Samoa, Mongolia, Nepal, and Kyrgyzstan. Here's the last of their four reports from India.
In our final episode of our four-part series from India, we talked to Deepak Kashyap, a psychologist in Mumbai, India. In our last segment with Deepak, he talked about his work as a mental health therapist and also about the growing movement for equal rights in India. In this episode, we talked to Deepak about his personal experience of coming out as a gay man in India.
I was a suicidal person for 2 years. When I recognized that I was different, I knew it. I was different when I was 11. I knew why, when a man is talking, all I'm looking at is his lips. It doesn't matter what he's talking about. I knew it's different. And when you're 12 or 13, you're hitting puberty, you recognize there's this funny thing going on with all your classmates. They're looking at each other and smiling, especially girls at boys and boys at girls. And you're wondering, like, what the hell are you doing? Why? What's so funny about it? Why are you giggling? And then it happens to you. So when I was 14, a man flirted with me. And I went red in my cheeks and my heart was pounding. And I was like, don't do this, do it a little more. Don't do this, do it a little more. So you get that feeling for yourself. And then you're like, oh, she wasn't silly. There was something going on with her when that boy was speaking to her. So it's a course of discovery on your, and specifically in a smaller town when there is no discourse on sex, period, leave alone homosexuality. Straight people cannot marry each other because they are from a different caste, because their parents don't approve. I think in a way, this whole gay movement is going to liberalize a lot of straight people in this country. This sexual change will not happen in a vacuum. So you grow up and 15, 16, you are at the safely thinking at the back of your mind. You know, I just like right now, but probably I will have a nice wedding, you know. I mean, we see weddings everywhere in movies and in movie. Indians have a clearly divided life before and after marriage. And you really are looking forward to it because on your marriage day, you're treated like no other day. You are really looking for that important day in your life. It's not just important because you're going to be with someone. So I was happily planning my marriage in with a woman, and now it's the only difference now will be like I'll be wearing the gown. But just going on, and at 16 I realized this is not changing. It's not going away. The more I suck, the more I like it. It's just not changing. And the more I suck, the more I want to be in his heart. Now it's gone above. It's not just genitals. I just want something more from him. And then you stumble upon, on purpose, happens an accident, that you flip through your dictionary and you see the word homosexual. And suddenly it sees befitting to your own identity. And then I went to the internet, and the first thing I typed, I was so scared, I didn't even type the word homosexual. What I typed was effeminate men. And that, or like on the second search page of Google, it took me to a gay dating website in India. It was a gold mine discovery for me. I was just like, there are other people. There are other people like me. And because earlier the people I used to have sex with were just the ones who were, I didn't know what their sexuality was. Then I was really, really, really lucky to meet a family of a lesbian person. Her mother helped me accept myself. They are an American family who've given up everything in the US and they stay in India taking care of animals. So she just really made me feel what I should have felt from other people. I was just looking for one adult to tell me that I'm okay being feminine. I just wanted one adult to tell me something other than be a man. I wanted one adult to tell me I am an adequate person. Because as a teenager, you can't think all of that on your own. Your critical thinking hasn't developed. It took a good 1 year of almost a monthly dose of positive self-esteem for me to come to 20 years of age and tell my biological parents that I'm gay. Because they're the ones I was living with. My parents went through a shock, but they went through a silent shock. I wanted something more. I think I'm drama. I like drama in life. I wanted something more. And they gave me just a couple of cries here and there. It's just like, no, shout, do something. They're like, we love you too much. I was lucky. I was really lucky that even though my parents didn't understand and or even sympathize, but they never became cruel to me. They did what they could in their human capacity was to just stand there and say, I can't look at you, but I'll hold you. I think my mom is very happy that I've found a well-settled man, and you know, she's more happy about that I'm happy. And she does wish I was not gay. It's not that she's become P-flag mother right now. She's not. And that's okay. I realized the importance of parenting my parents through these 7 years. They required parenting. They required me to stand there, hold them, and do exactly what they did to me. I understand you're hurting. You don't understand right now. That right now word was really important to time frame the whole problem and not abandon them. And they didn't abandon me. So I think I was kind of lucky. I was really lucky to have parents like that.
This concludes our four-part series from India. We want to thank Shruta and Deepak Kashyap for sitting down with us and for sharing their stories. To learn more about our Sapphic Nomads project, please visit our website at www.nomaddocumentary.com, or you can visit our Sapphic Nomads Facebook page. Till next time, this is Maggie Young with fellow Sapphic Nomad Katie Cook, reflecting on our time in Mumbai, India for This Way Out.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Dan Matthews, Dixie Trichel, Christopher Gall, and Chris Ann Eastwood, and Sapphic Nomads Katie Cook and Maggie Young contributed program material, with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Prentham, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out about our year-end campaign and how to find us on Facebook, Google+, Stitcher, Radio On Demand, and more. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KEOS College Station, Texas, 2NSB Chatswood, New South Wales, WGOT Gainesville, Florida, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.